Now, less than 40% of children under the age of 6 have access to early childhood care and education. Investing in early childhood development does not only benefit children, but could also increase work opportunities for women.
While the government has the mandate to ensure children have access to early childhood education and care, the services are actually provided in the private sector by women who are opening their homes to children, by women who set up small nonprofit organizations or micro-social enterprises to provide those services.
I feel like there also needs to be a different way of looking at what business is. So understanding that a preschool is still a business and finding the balance between the two. So defining what business looks like and that it's not just a charity or a place, again, where children are babysat. There's an incredible book, and I'm not going to remember the author now, but it's called Who Not How. And it's like a Bible to me. It teaches you to take a step back every time you have a problem or a situation to go, instead of how am I going to fix this, is who in my community or in my little family in our ECD center is best equipped to assist me with this. And by doing that, you give people more agency.
Across South Africa and beyond, a quiet revolution is underway. Women-led preschools are becoming engines of educational and economic growth. Today, the business of early learning, we unpack how social enterprises can be the mechanism that moves ECD from surviving to thriving. Welcome back to Our Voice, Our Future, powered by Breadline Africa, a podcast where real voices tell real stories that inspire change. I'm your host, Kelsley Sharpley, Donor Relations Officer at MasiCorp. At MasiCorp, education is the most powerful path out of poverty. From early childhood through to adult learning, we partner with the community of Masipumelele to unlock opportunities. Our educational programs is more than just a space. It's a hub of possibility where young children, their families, and educators come together to build a brighter future. Today we're asking, what if the future of early childhood development wasn't rooted in charity, but in sustainable, community-powered enterprise? Joining us is Marley Hoffman, pioneer in the space, who is at the intersection of education, innovation, and technology. Marley Hoffman is an education innovator, nonprofit leader, and champion for children's education, school, community empowerment. Former head of Grayton House Village School, former co-owner of Little Ashford Preschool, and currently the head of the AmniCorp Community Foundation, she gained recognition for pioneering the integration of tablet technology into early learning classrooms. As a TEDx Johannesburg contributor, Marley reminds us that we may not be able to prepare the future for our children, but at least prepare our children for the future. Good morning, Marley.
Morning.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We're so excited to have you on our podcast and just to chat about some very important things. I think early childhood development is such a key focus area with everything that is happening in South Africa. So I know that we're going to have an insightful and fun conversation, many laughs definitely in it. But my first thing is that I want to ask, you know, we're always starting on inspiration and what inspires us and what drives us and our passion, is to ask you, like, what inspired you to think about how fusing early childhood development and social entrepreneurship into one?
Thank you for having me. First of all, it's really exciting to be here. ECD and early childhood development is really one of my passions. So I'm very excited to be with you today. I think it literally started when I could walk, if I can go that far back. My mother always used to say, since I was old enough to talk, I said I wanted to be a teacher. So it was always in my path that children and education was going to be there. Then I had a father who said he's not going to allow me to study teaching because then I would be on his payroll my entire life. So I went and studied a BCom marketing. And then as soon as I finished with that, I went to go study teaching and then went into early childhood development and into preschool. And from there, I started off as a teacher's assistant, became a teacher and then a principal. And but the dream and the idea was always to have my own preschool. The business background obviously helped from studying that, which assisted, which I think is something that's lacking and we'll talk about a little bit later in that environment at the moment. But started with one little school and then realized it's a heart and a head thing. You can't just have the heart and not have the head in it. You can't pay salaries if you don't have the head in it. So it really became, how do we merge something that I'm really passionate about and that I feel there's a huge desire for with how do we make money, not necessarily become rich, but also how do I support my own family? And how do I support the families that I'm now ultimately responsible for that are part of the bigger family of the school? So that's sort of where the idea came from. You could, there are ways to do good and to sustain it at the same time.
Definitely. No, I definitely agree with that. And I just, you know, as you, I can see the passion. As you're speaking, I can just see it boiling over. What are the, in the early stages of when you were developing this and thinking about this and moving in the space, what did you find were your challenges? With everything that was going on, because, you know, this is a new concept. People are afraid. People are skeptical. You've got probably two supporters, of which is mostly family.
Yes.
So what were the challenges early on? Because I know as things develop and as they grow, they are, the challenges become according to how this thing is growing.
Yes, but very that's a completely early. Different beast when the bigger something gets.
Correct.
But initially, I mean, the biggest challenge is funding. Is finding funding and access to it. So with our first school, we literally started in a house and we had 17,000 rand. So it was, let's start with one classroom, four little tables. Okay, we've got 16 children now. We can employ one teacher. And slowly growing it up and expanding it from there. But it was developing slowly, starting from the beginning. And then trust, building trust. That takes time as well. You can't just open something where you're essentially looking after. I always say children are their parents' biggest asset. It's not how much money you have in your bank account or how big your house is. All those things you do for your children. So the amount of trust you build for parents is one of the biggest things as well. And that takes time too.
Yes. And the spin-off of that, what was the things that, wow, you didn't think that this was going to, oh my goodness, it was going to be so easy?
The children are the easy part. The children are always the easy part. It's easy to keep them happy. I think one of the challenges, again, as you grow, is the parents and keeping the parents happy and what they essentially, again, they're your customer, though the child is sort of, you know, the important part. But the parents have ideals and values and things that they specifically want for their kids. So that was it. And then, I mean, there's chat in a preschool. Every day is different. Every day is something different. So there's different challenges. Just as you think you've managed something, something else will come up. But again, financial stability is always a tricky thing to balance. I think getting in school fees is a huge challenge always. And not just for parents that are really extending themselves to put their children in a specific school. It doesn't matter what level it's on. But keeping ahead of your finances. And then staff education and qualification. I think there's a huge lack in understanding the importance of preschool and preschool teachers. Mm-hmm. So a preschool teacher's salary is not the biggest salary, as we can go back and refer to my father's statement. Creating pathways for those teachers that they can see there is development and there is something that will happen over time.
And when you're speaking about, you know, the resources and specifically human resources in this space, you know, your human resources, your staff is very, very important.
Your human resources are everything.
How do you keep them motivated or how did you keep them motivated in ensuring that, you know, it might seem small now, you know, this may be the salary or income that they're getting is small. How do you ensure that they see the bigger picture? Because, again, you know, they're your biggest asset and they have to push your vision, you know, all the way
through to what you see it and where you see this going.
They're also your biggest ambassadors. Along yes. with the parents and the children, they are your biggest ambassador. So it's really important for them to understand their career path and what opportunities are available for them. And then we also work with always giving the staff the opportunity for their children to be in the school. So there's always the opportunity for your children to come free of charge. There's always opportunity for education if you want to improve yourself, which we sponsor as well. And then clear career paths and guidance and as much workshops as we possibly can get them into.
Correct. And I was, you know, going back on something, you know, like the children are the easiest. And one thing that, you know, you have been strong in is using technology
yes.
To be able to move things forward. And how have you seen technology as a catalyst for moving forward in the space that you are in?
I think technology is one of the greatest things in the world. I wouldn't call myself a techie because I'm not that good at it, but I love technology. I love new things. I love what AI is doing for us. I love how it's giving us more time and freedom. The preschools that I used to own, we were the first preschool in Africa to introduce the use of iPads in the classroom. So it came with quite a bit of, people were quite scared and skeptical of it immediately. But once we explained to them, it's used to enhance the teaching experience. And it will never take the place of it. The parents slowly started understanding how it would work and what benefits there were. The staff started realizing from a time management point of view, from a planning point of view, all of that. Creating more time was one of the biggest things for me. And what I still use technology for in everything is giving me more time to focus on the things that are really important. So if technology can do the menial day-to-day things and give us more time to spend in the classroom with the children, it just, why not embrace it and use it continuously?
True. That's very true. And kids are so, they take it so easily. I mean,
they do. I mean, I give my kids my phone and in 10 minutes the passcode is off and they've managed to download some Minecraft as the new rage game without me even understanding how they know how to do it. They have this sort of intuitive way of knowing how to work with it.
Yes.
So, I mean, that's the future that they're headed towards as well. So to teach them that balance between systems and technology, but also, again, it's heart and head, I suppose, almost,
yes,
you know.
Definitely.
But human connection and interaction is so important.
That's definitely true.
And, you know, as you're speaking and I'm listening to you and I'm thinking, you know, in terms of how do we sustain this and how do we ensure that our infrastructure supports the vision that we see, you know, digitally where we are going within the ECD setup. Because, you know, it's lovely for us to have all of these tech stuff, but how do we keep that going in sometimes in spaces where we find ourselves where we have no connectivity or we have vandalism or, you know, those type of spaces that some of these ECD centers find themselves. So what are your thoughts around how we could
It's such a tricky thing, but as we're in the space of education, so it again, it's education, teaching people how to use it, teaching people the value of it, having a community understand the value of an ECD and what happens within that space. You know, an ECD, it's not just a place where children are babysat when their parents go to school. That's a place where their children are kept safe and educated. It's a place where people are employed to allow their children a better future. So it's sort of this like micro economy that is happening in every single community, be it a small informal ECD that has 20 children or 40 children or something much bigger. So to educate people and to teach them the value of what an ECD center is and create safety around that, that saying it takes a village is so true and so important. And if people understand the value of it, sort of hopefully the vandalism, those kinds of things will be taken away or will be removed from the equation. I think it's still tricky in terms of government and them understanding the importance of early childhood development. Mm-hmm. They have moved now that grade R is obviously part of primary school. But a child's brain physically grows 80% before the age of 6. So the amount of information they can absorb. So also speaking to policymakers, getting them to understand the importance of looking at that younger group of children and not just looking at it as a place for babysitting, but where real education and where the foundation is completely laid
Correct.
Happens.
Correct. And you know, like you're saying, we need to make the systemic change. We need to for people to see that this change is important. And how do we balance the tension between the systemic change and financial stability? Because, you know, you're trying to make a change and that does cost some money because you want to make an impact. But people are thinking, oh, this one just wants to get rich. Her preschool is her prices are so high. I'm not sending my child because she wants to buy a better car. She wants to paint her house.
Sometimes had parents that would, you can see they've worked it out. Okay, there are 120 children in the school. The school fees are X amount per month. That is what they're getting in. And not understanding that 70% of our costs go straight towards staff and salaries because it's again the heart of the school. So there is a big balance, but I feel like there also needs to be a different way of looking at what business is. So understanding that a preschool is still a business and finding the balance between the two. So defining what business looks like and that it's not just a charity or a place where children are babysat. Mm-hmm. There's an incredible podcast by Dan Paletta. I don't know if you know it, where he talks about charities and this idea that we have of if people are doing good, they shouldn't be allowed to make money. Yes. Be McDonald's and make billions of dollars a year. Don't do any good necessarily, but it's okay for you to do that. But there's this huge thing about, again, social entrepreneurship where you shouldn't be allowed to be successful in it. So again, it's a big change in mindset and understanding that there needs to be a business aspect to any enterprise, be it social or completely for-profit company.
And what would you say to someone who is, you know, looking to make this a business? You know, if there were key business principles that they would do, or how best you think they should equip or empower themselves or skill themselves?
I think one of the biggest things and what helped me a lot was mentorship, learning from other people. I'm a firm believer in learning from other people's mistakes instead of my own. And I don't think it's always necessary to reinvent the wheel. So spending as much time with people or finding people or preschools or whatever it is, which space you want to go into, and learning from other people, finding mentorship, working together as women, the collective power of putting a group of women that have the same passion together in a room and learning from each other, because everyone will come with a different skill set as well. Again, with the preschools, my business partner was much more finance orientated than I was. I was more the children, the day-to-day things of the kids, and the academic side of things was more important. So finding ways to merge your talents with other people's and learning from other people that have different talents to you. Mm-hmm. But I mean, again, it goes back to finances and having that in order and growing slowly, not starting too big, making sure you've got this little bit right and then growing slowly and developing.
Yes.
I think that's one of the most important things.
So that leads me to my next question about scalability. And again, you know, many social enterprises like Grow Educare and SmartCare scale their impact through franchise models. What are your reflections on scaling tech-enabled ECD solutions?
We have to, anything we think of in terms of in the space, we have to look at scaling. If we can do something really well and get that right, and we can scale it, it's amazing, be it through franchise or partnerships or that kind of thing. It's really important. Using tech as much as we possibly can to remove administratively heavy things, but always remembering at the heart of this is relationships with children and that connection must never be lost, that the children need that love and care and support and human interaction that tech cannot necessarily give them.
Yes, yes. When you want to scale, there's always some red tape.
Yes.
There's always policy. There's always funding. There's always culture. You know, you're there. Your heart is far, and then you need to do the admin work. And how did you navigate all around policy, around funding, around culture? How did you move around that to ensure that, you know, your successful business is running at this stage?
I think we started off slowly. And then we got in good investors along the way. It was at a stage where ECD was coming to light and we were seeing the people were understanding the importance of it. It was just before a lot of the private schools had started, you know, taking kids in from under 3 years old or from 3 years old. So it was all the private schools in the areas at that stage was having only from grade R and up. So there was a huge space available for it. And we didn't struggle with policy that much at that point.
Yes.
Because I think people were just almost thankful that these schools were actually going up and that there was space for them.
Mm.
So we didn't struggle with that. But finance, again, you know, it's always the money and finding that is always tricky. And then managing it and then realizing now we have to have a head office to deal with all these things. And again, all the extra admin that comes from that. And
yes.
Finances that are needed for that again as well. But the admin side of things is huge and you need a strong, you always have to have someone that is strong in admin to handle that side. That is definitely not me. I'm not good with
concur.
That. I think if you find those people, capture them, hold on to them, see that we can study them kind of thing, because you have to have those things have to be in order.
Correct. Yeah. And if we speak about, you know, measuring our impact, and social entrepreneurs often speak of a triple bottom line, you know, social, financial, and educational outcomes. How do you measure this in ECD?
Okay. So for me, someone asked me, how do you measure success? And for me, it was such a good question to ask, especially in the space that we're in. And I said, there are different things. But for me, at that stage, we were employing 200 women. And in our country, 200 women, or on average, every salary that one person earns supports roughly 7 people. So we were saying that for me is success. That's how we measure impact. So it's not just about grades for kids and financial stability or financial success. It's the softer skills. It's the ripple effect impact that it has. It's the children's well-being, not just do they know what 1+2 is. Are they happy? Are the staff happy? Are we retaining staff? Are we educating staff? Yes. Allowing the parents the freedom to know that when their children are at school, they're so comfortable that they can go out and be in the workforce and be comfortable with what they do. Making that a success as well, and the ripple effect that has as well. So it's almost, for me, when you measure social entrepreneurship, you look at the ripple effect of what the little bit of good that you're doing, what that actually, it's much more than what you necessarily think it is, or we hope that it is.
So Molly, I just want to ask you about, you know, when you start off your first thing, you're the center owner, you want to make sure everything is going smoothly, you're very hands-on. When do you start pulling back and allowing your staff or other members, you know, of your little community in your ECDs to take control? Because, you know, you're the visionary of it.
Yes.
And so pulling away, you know, sometimes it's like, oh, am I doing the right thing? So when do you think, you know, because a lot of social entrepreneurs, this is their dream, this is their vision, but they need to understand, if I want to scale, if I want to, you know, replicate in some spaces, I need to let go so that I can focus on other things, or I need to let go because I need to focus on funding, or I need to let go, you know, build relationships. So when do you get into that space where you're like, okay, it's time to let my baby go. It's time for my baby to swim.
I was about to say, it's so hard. It's so hard for anyone, because it's literally your child that you have to kick out of the nest now, and you have to give it wings, and you have to figure out a way, because otherwise that child will never grow. Exactly like you say, if you're trying to scale or to make something bigger. There's an incredible book, and I'm not going to remember the author now, but it's called Who Not How. And it's like a Bible to me. It teaches you to take a step back every time you have a problem or a situation, to go, instead of how am I going to fix this, is who in my community or in my little family in our ECD center is best equipped to assist me with this. And by doing that, you give people more agency and you allow them to slowly learn, but you're using their talents to do it. And
at some stage you have to go, I have to stop working in my business. I need to start working on my business now. Mm-hmm. So you have to take a step back. And I did a course, it was with Ernest & Young many years ago, and Mark Lamberti of MassMart was one of the mentors. And he said, if you can find someone that can do what you do or certain aspects of what you do at 60% as well as you can, it's good enough for a start.
Wow.
Which is really hard to think, okay, this, but I can do it at 100%. Yeah. I'm going to now give the reins over to someone that can do it at 60%. Mm. But you have to at some stage take a step back. You have to trust in the people that you've brought in, and you have to know who your whos are.
Yes.
And know that it's okay to make mistakes. It's okay if we make mistakes. The most important thing is to know that we can change lanes at any time. But we have to push those boundaries, and we have to let go, and we have to let other people make mistakes as well.
Yes. And you have to adapt.
Yes.
You have to adapt. And in the South African climate, you have to adapt all the time. Mm-hmm. As you were saying earlier on that, you know, at some point when I was growing up, I mean, we went to creche, mm-hmm. And then school. Like East, if you, some of my friends never went to grade up.
They never went, to grade one.
They just went to grade one. And you know, you kind of have to adapt in those spaces. And now things are changing in South Africa. We're now, this is being formalized. And you know, there are talks about maybe even formalizing pre-grade R.
Yes.
And how does that work, you know? So how do you constantly ensure that you're relevant as a social entrepreneur? Because again, as you were saying, this is your baby, but you need to understand that your baby needs to evolve, your baby needs to change, to grow.
Yes.
How do you adapt without losing your core values, without losing your core vision, without losing that focus at the end of the day, this is what I want to achieve, without compromising yourself? Because sometimes a funder comes in and a funder says, I'll give you money on these terms. Yeah. You know, how do you navigate that as a social entrepreneur?
You have to stay true to your core and your set of values. And again, those values can be reassessed and they can change over time. But you have to know what those are. Because if those are in there, you can go, does this fit with it? If it doesn't matter how hard it is, you have to walk away. Again, funders will push, and funders will also push to a certain extent, and then they'll give into what they think you will give into, and then try and change it anyway once they're in. So if you're starting on a foot where you're already sort of compromised, and now the funder's coming in and they're going to push in a different way, it's not, you can't stay true to that. So you have to be willing to adapt. I agree completely. But at your core, you know why you are there, and what the difference is that you want to make. And sometimes it is to relook how you are doing things. But if your core, if you fundamentally know that you are here, in this case, to uplift children in our country and to change the trajectory of this country, then it's not that hard, because you know where your true north is. You know what you're pushing towards.
Mm, mm, mm.
And in terms of, you know, sustainability, because that's where you go, where you're going to, again, you know, you're the center owner, you're the visionary of this. Do you plan, do you have this 10-year sustainability plan, and you're just like, right, I've written it down, I'm fine, I think I'm going to be okay? Or do you sustain certain aspects? Because I think sometimes sustainability is not just about the entire thing.
Yeah.
Some things can be sustained, and some things you're just like we're writing that off for now. Mm. So when you're thinking about sustainability in your space, in this ECD space as a social entrepreneur, what do you think about when you're thinking about sustainability?
I think the two things that always have to be at the core are the children, again, and their happiness, and the staff. And sustaining those two things, the other things will come. There are times when you'll have enough funds to buy certain, you know, more equipment, or to make something more beautiful, or and there are times that they won't. But if your staff are trained and they're happy and they're employed, those things don't make as much of a difference.
Mm.
Sustainability is, again, it's something you have to look at on a constant basis. Anything that happens in the political sphere, or what is going on in our country, or what is going on abroad, changes all how everything works, especially in a social space. So you have to be aware of it. Again, if you have your true north, I think it's still okay to know where you're going, but to maybe not get there as quickly as you thought. Mm-hmm. So it's always great to have a sustainability plan, and we want to get there in 10 years, but it needs to be relooked constantly and changed. You might reach it earlier. It might take a little bit longer, but you have to constantly be aware of it and look at it and adapt all the time.
Correct. And, you know, when I think about sustainability also, I think about the South African context of infrastructure and space and how important is physical space.
I wish.
Because, you know, kids, they say kids need space to grow and to learn and to explore. And, you know, and we look at Breadline Africa, who are creating the spaces for the ECD, you know. But, you know, how important is infrastructure and creating that space
for
kids?
Vital. Absolutely vital. To give children or youth or anyone in this world somewhere to go that they can be proud to go and know that they're safe when they get there changes everything else. That's where learning happens. You can't learn if you're worried about where you are, if it's safe or unsafe. If you have a beautiful space that you're working or that you're learning in, it just makes everything else so much easier. It's not the only thing, but it is to have that. The company that I'm or the foundation that I'm working for now, we have a hospitality school in Bali that is the most beautiful building, one of the most beautiful buildings I've ever seen. It's sort of created in the shape of a shell, and then they have a permaculture garden on the roof. But the children that come, they come from mud huts every day, but they come dressed in their beautiful uniforms. They are proud to be there, and you can see when they enter, it's sort of they feel completely differently. So it makes a massive, massive, massive difference.
And kids buy in from the community, in from parents to understand, you know, this is a safe space. And how do you get the buy-in from the community and spaces that, you know, you are in, your organization is in? How important is that for you?
It's extremely important. You can't do it without the community. And if you have the community's buy-in, it's so much easier to do anything. It's again that it takes a village idea, but if the center or ECD areas are seen as these little micro economies for the community, it changes everything.
That's definitely true. So now we rethink, you know, about this is business and children. And as you said, you say it's a heart and a head thing, you know, for ensuring that you remain sustainable and ensuring that you grow. And some people think, the minute they hear social enterprise, they think business, and then, like, you know, they just like, this person's going to be ruthless and this person's not going to care about the kids. But how do you make them understand that these two can, you know, work as one? They can together be a beautiful partnership. How do you change those mindsets? Because, I mean, you're walking, probably when you're looking for funding, you're walking in spaces and you're trying to share that vision with people. How do you?
I think you hit the nail on the head with the word partnership. It's a partnership. From the moment when a child enters your school, it's a partnership with the parents. It can't work if the teacher and the parent are not working together. From a funding point of view, it's a partnership. Both people need to have the same goal. Both people need to understand what the vision is and where we're going. But it's always going to be a partnership in terms of it can't be successful. It's like having a marriage with only one person in, you know.
That's true. That's true. That's not a fun marriage.
No.
And so when you think about a few years from now, 10, 15 years from now, with things that are constantly changing, because change is the only constant, how do you, you know, imagine this preschools or ECDs or, you know, in the next 20 years?
The entire space within our country. Yes. I think, in an ideal world, we would want everyone to wake up and understand that if we're going to change where our country is going, that it needs to start at ECD level. We can't wait to grade R01. We can't wait till high school. We can't wait till university and then offer free university for children. It's too late then. We need to build a foundation from the get-go, from younger than three even. because of the ripple effect again that we spoke about, that it, you know, what it changes. So ideally that every child has access to, in our country, every child has access to a safe, loving ECD space that allows their parents the freedom to go to work and improve their lives as well. I mean, I think we've got, I think the census of 2021 said we've got 8.6 million children under the age of six. And that's increasing all the time.
Yes,
and like, if we can get those children and solidify what their foundation looks like in terms of education, it would be incredible.
There's always a call to action, or always something that we want to leave people with. Mm. And what would, I mean, I can't say one. So many things. Especially in early childhood development, there's so many things that we need to learn. But for you, you know, what would you encourage our listeners, policymakers, funders, family, friends, the community? You know, what would your few words or paragraph, doesn't matter, what do you want to leave them with after this conversation? So that it continuously rings in the head every time they hear the word ECD and social entrepreneurship.
The importance of all of it and to get involved. I think in terms of policymakers, to allow the women that are running these ECDs a seat at the table so that they can understand better what their challenges are, what they need, what guidance they need, what education they need, what they need help with. From a parent's point of view, to get involved with the school, it's a partnership. Go further than just dropping your child off at the door. In terms of donors, get involved in early childhood development. There'll be so, from a social point of view, it'll be so different if children are safe and secure and happy from that young. It will change everything else in terms of, you know, as children get older. And then in terms of funders, this is where you should be spending your money.
Yes, yes.
If we start young, again, it makes the path for children so different, that everything in this country would change if we have secure young children entering school, by the time they get to primary school, entering with a good, solid foundation.
That's awesome. And I want to trick you with this one. Something up my sleeve. What quote would you leave with us today?
Sure.
Because I've heard you, I mean, I think I should read more often. Maybe attend more seminars. But if there's a quote that you think you can, or something you've heard that you just, this is your final drop mic moment.
Final drop mic.
There
are many. I think one, if we look at the ed tech space and we look at education and all of that, there's a futurist called Jim Carroll. And he says 65% of today's preschoolers will live and work in jobs that don't exist yet.
Wow. That is
so for me, in terms of working with children from a very young age, teaching them adaptability, making them comfortable with technology, all of that, maybe... I don't know if that's a good enough mic drop, but that's what I've got.
It's excellent. I'm not going to forget that. Definitely. But it was lovely chatting to you. Thank you so much for joining
the
podcast and being with us. I've learned so much. I've learned so much. I think when I'm driving back now, I'm just going to be like going through all these things in my head. But thank you so much.
It was such a pleasure joining you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Marley, thank you for sharing your insight and passion. You've shown us that ECD can be a force for social justice, women's empowerment, economic inclusion, and yes, even viable business models. To our listeners, if you're moved by this conversation, here's how you can help shift the ECD sector. Support initiatives integrating enterprise models into early learning. Advocate for investment in women-led ECD programs. Explore how visibility, policy, and funding can pivot from surviving toward thriving. Visit breadlineafrica.org to learn about their infrastructure work and check the show notes for links to Marley's TEDx talk,
early learning resources, plus Grow Educare and Smart Start articles. Let's turn possibility into action and shape our children's futures by redefining what's possible in early childhood development. And that's a wrap for Season 1. We look forward to more inspiring and thought-provoking conversations in the future.